Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks. You think some punk butt college kid could come up with this poop? It's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed. Unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks. Woo. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he's a flawed, experimenting person seeking outings and adventures. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
That's going to go on my tombstone. That's the perfect summary of me. Ahoy!
Each week, we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. Michael B. Jordan is circling to play him in the movie. It's Devon, ladies and gentlemen. Woo!
You know what is so funny? Because I'm coming out of a beard era, and whenever I went to take the beard off and go with a different configuration, Michael B. Jordan was literally what I like went for with the mustache, nice chin, soul patch combo. So that is, I will take that comparison all day. That's one of the most handsome men in the world.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. As are you, true. Devon. As are you. So there you go. Works out really, really well. We're excited to have you back. How have things been? It's been a hot minute. Like, what's going on in your world?
Yeah, it has been a hot minute since my last night in Soho snafu, which was so funny because, like, I remember I had, like, marathon, like, the whole Cornetto trilogy, like, the, like, night before and, like, work. So I, like, literally just, like, made myself so sleepy. And then that's how I missed it. So, yeah, it has been a minute. But, things are going pretty good. In year three, going on year four of Spectre Cinema Club, that's my genre movie podcast, and 2023 was a great year for it. We had a lot of growth. I host that with my buddy Garrett McDowell, and so that's going pretty well. We just we're about to launch our Patreon as well, so so big things going on over on the pod, and you know, as far as LA life and stuff, you know, I'm in the coffee shops, I'm typing on my laptop, I'm doing the LA screenwriter thing, you know, classic uh-huh. behavior, hopefully we'll have a short film with like an actual budget out by the end of the year, fingers crossed. Trying to make some moves.
Very cool. Very cool. I received an email from Devon several months ago, and it's like, you're not allowed to talk about Poor Things unless I'm on the show. Like this is the rule that we're having over this award season. You're not allowed to do a podcast with poor things on it unless you invite me on the show. And I was like, that sounds amazing. I would love to have you on to talk poor things. So
I had to make sure to stake my claim early for this one because I was like, that's one of the most meme movies ever. So I was like, I had to stake my claim early.
Yeah, totally. All right. So we do have poor things on the agenda today. We also have American Fiction on the agenda today. Excited to talk about that as well. And then for Best Ever Challenge, we're going with Emma Stone movies in which Emma Stone appears in. So we'll do that. And of course, some buried treasure and other fun stuff too. So let's get to it. We'll kick it off by talking about American Fiction.
Monk, your books are good, but they're not popular.
Editors, they want a black book.
They have a black book. I'm black, and it's my book.
You know what I mean.
Look at what they published. Look at what they expect us to write.
I just want to rub their noses in it.
I'd be standing outside in the night.
Deadbeat dads, rappers, crack.
You said you wanted black stuff.
That's black, right?
I see what you're doing.
Thelonious Monk Ellison's writing career has stalled because his work isn't deemed black enough. Monk, a writer and English professor, writes a satirical novel under a pseudonym aiming to expose the publishing world's hypocrisies. The book's immediate success forces him to get deeper enmeshed in his assumed identity and challenges his closely held worldviews. This description, much like the marketing material, trailers, all that kind of stuff, really doesn't touch on what this movie's about. It touches on kind of the canvas this movie is painted on, which I think is a really interesting thing. And we'll get into it. Great cast here. We're looking at a first-time writer director in Cord. What did you guys think of American Fiction? Andrew, did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I loved it.
Devon, did you like it, love it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I would say I liked it.
All right. I am firmly in the camp of loved it. I loved this movie so very much. I haven't stopped thinking about it. I also have that thing that happens with me that I think in the effort to be completely transparent, where I got to see the movie and then immediately hang out with the people in the movie and talk to them about the movie. And that always has a little bit of a shine to it. So I really have to get, you know, several months down the road from that to watch a movie again and kind of parse through feelings that aren't affected by, oh, these people are so cool. You know, like there's that element to it as well. And it was incredible. It was probably one of the best press conferences I've been to. Sterling K. Brown was there. Jeffrey Wright was there. Issa Rae was there. Erica Alexander was there. Tracy Ellis Ross was there. Adam Brody was there. It was pretty much the whole crew. So that was a blast. Andrew, why don't you kick us off with some thoughts on American Fiction?
Got to talk about performances up front. Everybody's going to be talking about Jeffrey Wright, but honestly, Sterling K. Brown stole this movie for me. I think that he is giving a just tour de force, definitely a career highlight, in my opinion. So many layers to that character, and he, despite some elements like the he's going through a lot in his life, but there are still moments where he can find levity and, you know, put a smile on his face. It's a very, like I said, it's a very layered character, and I really appreciated the writing around that. So I guess Cord Jefferson, the writer gets a big thumbs up from me there as well.
Yeah, I really love the cast in this. I think everybody's doing a great job. I think if I were to sum up the reason I love this movie so much, it's probably in that it is a meta movie that doesn't let the meta-ness, it really almost doesn't let it out of the room. Like it just kind of marinates in what it's saying about the idea of black media or the idea of what it means to be, you know, black media. Is it gangs and drugs and slavery, or can there just be black stories that don't involve those things? And the movie is a black story that involves those that doesn't involve those things, right? At its heart, this is a movie about a black man who, you know, isn't in a gang or selling drugs or, you know, directly enslaved. You know, it's a movie itself about the thing it's saying media, or it's questioning at least what media should do. And I think that meta-ness really hit with me and stayed with me, because I think it's a really interesting nuance and balance for us to continue to consider when it comes to race in America, in this idea of continuing to reckon with the past, continuing to understand that it's not solved, that it's, there's, you know, that it's still something that's really important to pay attention to and identify. And also, yet at the same time, the end goal is that we treat each other as just human beings and not as Black human beings or white human beings or, you know, Latino human beings or whatever the case may be. So finding the nuance and balance in that is a really interesting process. And this movie, I think, comes out at a time where it's having something to say to shift that conversation into a deeper level. So,
I mean, that's kind of what sucked me in as well, because you mentioned like kind of how like the difference in the description is really just kind of the backdrop for it. And I was actually like very happy that it wasn't leaning as hard into the premise and concept. I was like, oh, I don't really need this, you know, the mistaken identity shenanigans. I mean, it like kind of similar vibes of that Melissa McCarthy movie from a few years ago. It kind of gives off vibes of that. So I was very happy that it was more focused on the people in this film, you know, and kind of making the statement about, you know, separating creative identity from, you know, the person themselves, and like that people are more than just the stories that they tell. And so I related like pretty hard to Monk's character in a way that, like, you know, a lot of projects that I do personally, like I always kind of have that debate. I'm like, oh, like, do I, you know, have to, whenever I'm, you know, promoting something, do I have to promote that, like, oh, this is by a Black queer, you know, creative artist? Like,
right,
sometimes I don't feel the need for that. Like, you know, my genre, you know, podcast show, like, I don't, you know, put it like in the, in my like description, like, oh, hosted by, you know, queer BIPOC person. I'm like, no, this is my genre podcast, and, you know, I'm presenting it as just me as a person. So I very much, like, you know, felt with Monk's plight, especially like the, you know, line where he's just like, I'm Black and it's my book, so it's a Black book, you know, it doesn't have to, yeah, you know, like I really was endeared to, you know, kind of just watching these people that are, you know, like, they don't have the worst lives, but they also, and, you know, they're actually like kind of well off, like, you know, compared to most other, you know, when you, you know, watch a story about the underdog, you know, coming from poverty characters, and it's like, they're not these people, but yet they still have, you know, regular human issues that people deal with, you know, whether it be insecurities or grief and trauma and death, you know, like these things still exist for these people, regardless of the background. So like, I was happy with how rich it was character wise, but I would say the thing that kept me from loving it is the kind of lack of bite from the meta commentary. Not that it needed to like kind of make a, you know, like a, you know, a biting controversial, you know, statement, like, this isn't, you know, Boots Riley, sorry to bother you, you know, this is, you know, coming right at from a different angle, but I still could have taken a little bit more from the bite, so that way Monk could kind of have a little bit more of a emotional catharsis by the finale. The third act is kind of where things went pretty wobbly for me, but overall this is still a very like solid film with, you know, great performances across the board.
I think I understand what you're saying about the third act, and my guess is that it's a very conscious decision by Cord to not end the movie with a big In fact, the movie pulls the rug out from under you in some ways. It kind of gives you that big ending and then goes, no, this isn't what I'm interested in, right? Like, it goes, here's how a movie like this might end, and that's not what we're doing here. And so it does kind of feel a little anticlimactic in some ways. But I kind of liked that. I kind of liked that it was a little bit different, and it was like, no, we're just leaving it here. Yeah. Andrew, some more thoughts?
I like how this movie is not afraid to talk about all different forms of racism that Monk finds himself in. I'm trying to think of a section. Like, whenever he's in, this isn't spoilerish, people. So, whenever he's in the judging panel, and there's these other groups of judges with him. And it's the Jeffrey Wright and Issa Rae character saying, I don't think we should really have this book in in the contest. And the other judges are like, yeah, we should, because now is the time to listen to black authors.
It's one of the best moments in the movie.
It might be my favorite moment of the entire movie.
It's great editing, but too, because they like split it really like down is. The like table too, and like kind of have them like, you know, like pitted yes. on each mm-hmm. sides too. Like it's like, yeah, very well written, edited scene, like overall, like, you know, like putting kind of the stamp on like kind of the main statement, you know, behind some of the themes that they're working with.
Yeah. It's interesting but to... Go ahead, Andrew. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was saying, it reminds me of Get Out, sort of in that sense.
Yeah.
Where you, for so long, you see what could be generically called right-wing racism portrayed in film. And it's not often that you see the overcorrection of that still being kind of racist in its own way. It's a... I think that movies like Get Out and like American Fiction show me where I have made mistakes in my life and things that I can try and do better. So
that's
what I really appreciate about this movie.
These movies have brought attention to what I call casual racism. These are like the things that people are doing that they most likely don't even know that they're doing. But because you can just tell that it's just something that they've learned, or, you know, the way that they came up in a certain way, like whenever they're having like the first the phone call chat with Stag, quote unquote, and, you know, Jeffrey Wright like does his normal voice and like doesn't do it, quote unquote, black enough. And then she was like, oh, wait, no. Okay, now that sounds like you. Okay, like, you know, because of what she imagined this character to sound like, you know. So, like, even moments like that, because I've had, like, that was, like, something that I would get, like, all through school. You know, people would be like, oh, you talk so white. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense, you know. I'm black, and the way that I'm talking makes me, that doesn't make sense, you know. Like, you know, voices don't have race, you know. Like, that's not how it works. So again, like, that was, like, kind of another thing that I, like, really related to, like, in, you know, just seeing these, like, little moments and the way that the film, like, does highlight them, like, you know, almost, like, with a smidge of camp. I wouldn't call this movie camp, but there's, with the way that they kind of amplify those, like, little small moments to like really draw the attention to like, hey, this is like something that is normal but also like not, and it's not cool.
I know it comes from a really honest place for Cord, and Jeffrey Wright has also talked about how this character, he had to play this character because it felt so real to his life, and that he's dealt with a lot of these things. And Cord has told stories of a friend of his who's getting into the business and wants to write, and had a meeting with executives, and they were like, so what are you interested in writing? And she was like, I love rom-coms and I love horror. Like, I love, those are kind of the two things I'm really connected to, and that. And so they finished the meeting, and then she gets a call from the executives in this meeting. Hey, we've got this great project for you. It's about a blind slave who learns to play the piano. And it's back in slavery, and she's just like, is that a rom-com? Is that a horror? Like, what is going on right now? And he just tells these stories of time and time again where it's just like, you know, being pigeonholed by your race or ethnicity or whatever the case may be, just because, you know, that's Hollywood just has those ideas of, you know, what those movies are going to be. And it's wild. And I think a movie like this, like you said, Andrew, draws attention to the fact that as much as the obvious ugliness of the racism of a certain portion of this country is, that there is this subtle racism that can happen when you are against racism, but you're still not listening. Right? Like, you know, like you think you're one of the good guys, but you're still not listening. And I think all of us who are in a place of, you know, not having to deal with that, having the privilege of not having to deal with those things, just have to continue to listen and keep our ears open and make sure that we're checking ourselves. So
yeah. And the two movies that we're talking about today, like, kind of are both sides of an interesting topic around film these days, is like, who should be telling what type of stories. You know, and like, this is like, this film is like an interesting one that is like, this is important because this is a Black director telling a very, you know, Black centric story, versus you can also still have movies where it's like, you know, a man telling a female coming of age story, but it's still important, you know, to also get the other side of the perspective. So it's like, and again, like, it comes down to like, you kind of almost have this pressure sometimes when you're creating something. And if I'm writing something, I'm like, do I need to have some sort of, you know, text, you know, to illustrate like my, you know, very specific point of view? Do I need to put that in something, or can I just tell these regular stories the way that, you know, Monk kind of wants to? And Issa Rae's character is fascinating because she's kind of like trying to, she's like kind of playing both sides in a, in an interesting way of like, oh, I'm you know, like, I'm still providing because I am a Black author and I'm still putting stories out and that's important. And if I have to, you know, do it in this way to get it out there, then, you know, then so be it, you know. And she kind of, you know, the little, you know, conversation that between Monk and her is really fantastic in the way that they kind of, you know, give a whole kind of roundabout, you know, a view of, you know, this, this kind of issue and the way to kind of tackle it, and, you know, what stories should be told versus like, you know, which stories can be told, is very fascinating.
I'll tell you what I love about that conversation between Jeffrey Wright and Issa Rae's character is they're both right and they're both wrong. You know, it's just a beautiful conversation, this moral quandary. And they're both, they're not, I wouldn't say, I would say Jeffrey is more adamant about his moral conflicts with doing, you know, stories like what she's talking about. But I think that the way that she, you know, describes, hey, these are still stories that can and should be told, even though they're not authentic to me, that doesn't take away from anything that there's, the stories are giving to people. And I don't know, there was just something really powerful. Like, I just love that neither of them, in the end, neither of them came out on top or on bottom. It was just a good conversation between the two of them.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I also like how all of the characters are challenged on their beliefs too, which is part of the nuance and beauty of this movie. And I think, again, one of the reasons I connect to movies like this is the ability for the movie to go, there are truths here that we're still exploring in trying to figure out, like, you know, the nuance of these things. For, I'll just give you a for instance of, you know, the characters being, you know, kind of challenged on their own beliefs. There's a very poignant moment where the Jeffrey Wright character, where Monk says something about, like, you know, I don't live in that world. I don't face that kind of racism today, or something like that, immediately before a cab passes him by to pick up a white guy. Like, there's a very specific, you know, kind of thing the movie is doing where it's like, okay, sure, yeah, it's not the same, but it's kind of the same. Like, you know what I mean? So it, like, challenges its characters on their worldviews and on what, the things that they're saying in a very interesting way, which I really, really love.
Yeah, Monk
goes for satire. Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say that Monk goes through like an interesting, you know, arc of, you know, he, because like you said, like, when they have that conversation, nobody's right or wrong, but he is so dependent on being right. Like, that's kind of a running thing throughout throughout the movie, which again I can also relate to because people call me a know-it-all quite often, because apparently you know, so I get like, you know, when he wants, you know, something to be definitive, while the movie is kind of saying like, a lot of things can be true at once, and kind of, you know, there can be layers and circumstances, you know, via what background you come from, but it's still kind of, like you said, like, it's still, you're still dealing with it, you know? So, things can all, you know, multiple things can be true. And that's like one thing that Monk just like really can't get past through most of the movie, which is a great, like, kind of flaw for his character.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other thoughts that you guys have on this movie? Other stuff that you want to get to as we talk about American Fiction?
No. I think this was a very solid film. It's very funny, like consistently good chuckles throughout. Also looks really good. There's some, you know, it's not over stylish, but it's a very still like very nice looking, well put together film. The score, the different score beats are fantastic in this as well.
I agree. It does seem like technically it's pretty great all around. And probably one of the reasons that it's getting a lot of awards attention is because it is so solidly done all around. I'm really excited, and I guess this will be my one last thing, but I'm really excited to see what Cord does next. I did get a chance to ask him about that. He is really pumped about doing a modern Western, and he'd like to do something in like the Hell or High Water kind of idea with like brothers who are on the run in the West. He's got an idea that he's been bubbling around in his head. And it's a great example of this is a story that doesn't have to be quote unquote a black story. It's just a story that he wants to tell and he's excited to do it. And hopefully, this movie's success will allow him the freedom to really tell the stories that he's excited to create. So I'm excited to see that.
Yes, please. You just said a whole bunch of great things in that, like he wants to do a modern Western. Well, Watchmen. There were a couple of episodes of Watchmen that kind of reminded me of a Western, so I think that mm-hmm. he could do it.
We haven't mentioned that about Court Jefferson. He's been stuff. Yeah, he's done so much on TV stuff, and he was a big part of Lindelof's Watchmen.
I can totally see that now.
Yeah, yeah. So he is just kind of making the leap into film and doing it in a big way, and excited to see where that lands him as we go down the road. But I really enjoyed the movie and I hope to see more. So that is American Fiction. I think that would be a recommend from all of us. It is still playing in theaters. I think it's supposed to go wider here next week. So it should.
My screening was super funny because this is the perfect take your grandparents to go see this. Like I saw almost everyone that was in the theater was like a teen or somebody in like their like early 20s with their like grandparent. It was kind of
nice.
Funny. Yeah. So this is that wholesome movie for that experience.
There you go. Speaking of wholesome movies, let's move on to some Yorgos Lanthimos. Let's talk about Poor Things.
No. She's an experiment.
Good evening.
Her brain and her body are not quite synchronized. But she's progressing at an accelerated pace.
Tell me, where did she come from?
I shall. For it is a happy tale.
I am Bella Baxter, and there is a world to enjoy, circumnavigate.
It is the goal of all to progress, grow.
A woman plotting her course to freedom. How delightful.
Brought back to life by an unorthodox scientist, a young woman runs off with a lawyer on a whirlwind adventure across the continents. Free from the prejudices of her time, she grows steadfast in her purpose to stand for equality and liberation. Well, that's one way to sum up this movie. We are looking at Yorgos Lanthimos' latest film, Poor Things. This, of course, is Emma Stone leading the way in this, Mark Ruffalo as well. What did you guys think about this movie? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Devon, you first.
Oh, I loved this movie. I knew I would from the minute it was announced and then everything that I saw. I'm a big Lanthimos guy. I think he has one of the best track records of any working director at the moment. And we are just like, this is one of those movies that just like made me feel lucky to like be like, I'm just glad that we live in a world where we get cinema like this. You know, just something very, you know, beautiful and, you know, rich with texture and exploring all these ideas and just exploring beauty and the disgustingness of life. And you know, the Frankenstein story is the story that keeps on giving. You know, I'm doing other podcasts and we're covering like the Universal Frankenstein movies. And it's interesting just how malleable that story is. And, you know, this movie is doing just so much in It is Yorgos Lanthimos just untethered and Emma Stone just giving one of those electric performances of a lifetime. Like, you know, like there, I can't think of another character as, you know, distinct as Bella Baxter.
Andrew, did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or was it just okay?
Well, first time I saw it, I thought it was okay. The second time I saw it, I liked it. And now I'm going to say that I really like this movie, close to loving it.
All right.
I'm going to go with just really liked it.
Growing on you over time at the really liked it. I am at the absolutely loved it portion of the spectrum. And I will say, before we continue going to discussing this movie, that is not, I am not a Yorgos guy. Like, that is not something that I have usually come in line with. The Favorite was fine. I didn't, you know, I didn't hate The Favorite. I got what it was doing and enjoyed parts of it. Everything else was just kind of like The Lobster, right?
The Lobster.
Yeah, I didn't quite jive with The Lobster. I couldn't quite get there. One of his movies is among the worst movies ever made, in my opinion. It's so bad I've put the title out of my mind. Something about
the killing of deer.
Deers, oh, that are sacred, goodness. Or something. Just an absolute atrocity of a film.
that's my favorite Lanthimos. I mean, Killing of a Sacred Deer. I love showing that movie to people. God, yeah. It's so good.
Yeah, that one polarized me pretty hard. I did not like that at all. So it's interesting for me to watch a Yorgos movie and just go, you know, unabashedly love it like this. And I think it's, for me, probably the main reason is because I think more than any other of his movies, he is finding real purpose in his tendencies to explore the things unexplored of humanity, like the, some would say, depravity, the idea of those things that we don't often bring to the light. And I think he is doing that in a way here that feels so much more purposeful to me than I've seen him do before, and also that I resonate with. I resonate kind of with what he's saying about what it means to be human and those kind of things. So add to that, like you mentioned, an Emma Stone performance that is just absolutely mind-blowing. And I come away from liking this quite a bit. Devon, what are some of the things you really enjoyed about it?
I mean, just, it's such a, I love a, you know, a kind of odyssey of a movie. Like, you know, there's a lot of debate online about film length these days and, like, you know, what's necessary and, like, could you cut, you know, 15, 20 minutes out of this movie? Probably you could, but I don't want that. Like, this is a movie that I am just, like, so nice to be able to sit in this world. Like, these characters are so fully realized in the costuming and the colors and the way that everything looks like. So, like, this is a movie that I have no issue, like, just seeping in for 2.5 hours because I just, like, enjoy being in the world. And I'm also I've come around to really liking films of the subgenre of, you know, exploring, you know, the kind of the human condition in these kind of accelerated ways with the genre twist of it, of, you know, her, you know, primitive mind growing into an already adult body and, like, the way that kind of works. You Won't Be Alone is a film from last year that I really love, that kind of also does a, you know, woman learning about the world through these kind of extreme circumstances. And so just, like, the way how fully realized this world is, that allows, you know, Bella to kind of go on this journey and absorb information, you know, through not only different settings, but then also the different people, the different men that she interacts with specifically, you know, so just the world that this, painted is just, it's just, there's just so much to go into, you know, and I, you know, went back for a second time as well. And I'm probably going to go back for a third time before it leaves the theaters, just because it's, you know, I just like being in there and, like, being able to craft a film like that, I think, is such an impressive feat. And all of his films kind of seem like they take place in, like, their own, like, little worlds. But again, I don't think he has done anything as just fully realized as this one.
Andrew, some thoughts?
Yeah, you guys totally took the words out of my mouth whenever you're talking about how this movie deals with what it means to be human. you know, a quick, you know, vignette of from birth to, you know, old age of what, you know, a human goes through. It's absolutely fascinating mentally what a human goes through. You guys, yeah. The one thing that I would add is congratulations to Mark Ruffalo for creating one of my favorite villains ever.
He's so amazing in this.
Duncan Wedderburn might go down as like one of my favorite villains in recent years. There are scenes where I think he is absolutely hilarious and I love him to death. And then there are scenes where I think he is just evil incarnate. And the fact that he can pull off both and it feels like the same character, it doesn't feel like, you know, this strange dichotomy that I can't follow. I'm like, no, that doesn't feel like that was what the Duncan Wedderburn in the last scene would do. He's just that ranged and that expressive of an individual that you buy into all of his manicness.
He's so good. My crowd literally was laughing at every single line of dialogue he had. Like, just every time he spoke, the crowd was laughing. And he's just so great. There's I saw an article talking about how 2023 was a great year for performances of pathetic men. And I know Charles Melton might end up getting like maybe the supporting actor nom, but I'm rooting for Ruffalo. And if he does not get the Oscar, he does get my award for best most pathetic man of 2023, because he is just a hot mess and he's so fun in this movie.
Well, it's, I mean,
we're doing Oscar predictions. I think it's going to Robert Downey Jr.
I was gonna say it's a crazy stacked category, supporting actor, but
I hope not. Melton or Ruffalo or bust.
There you go. I also wanted to say that the clarity with which Yorgos deals with sexuality and different parts of the human experience, the idea of being so, I want to say explicit, we're not talking about, you know, hardcore porn here or anything, but to be explicit enough that we are watching a movie where that almost becomes less titillating, right? There's an idea that he's pushing it so far that it's like you become less distracted by the fact that there's sex or nudity or those kind of things, and more aware that this is just a part of human existence. And I think there's something to be said for that idea. And because I've had conversations with other critics, with friends, like, you know, why did there have to be so much sex? Why did there have to be so much nudity? I do think it's purposeful. I do think it plays a role in what he's trying to teach us and where he's trying to lead us with the all the furious jumping. So like there's something purposeful going on here. And, you know, it is Frankenstein with an emphasis on, you know, being frank. I think he uses
the nudity and sexuality to tell two different stories. Like, he tells it from, you know, the pubescent era, whenever, you know, that's all that's on your mind is sex, sex, sex.
Well, but then there's also, I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt just a second, because what's interesting is you're dealing with a character who is born post pubescence. So we're getting to see like childhood, adolescence, and adulthood in somebody who is born post body changes, hormone changes, those kind of things, which I think really gives us an interesting perspective on, you know, on that thing. Continue. Sorry, I wanted to mention that.
No, you're absolutely right. And that should be mentioned. But they can tell that story whenever you're going through that phase. But then there's also the matured element to it when love is introduced. And I think it's actually not the love being introduced, but there's a scene in this movie that really sticks with me, and I think it might be my favorite scene in the entire movie, is where she is in bed with an individual and she says, "Before we do this, how about you tell me a secret about yourself and I'll tell you a joke?" And it leads to something that was going to be 100 more times beautiful than what it would have been if it was just, you know, physical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of stuff that I would like to see more of in a Yorgos Lanthimos film, because I think that out of all of his films, this one is probably the most digestible. If you can, if you're an individual who can get past, you know, the profanity and the nudity and stuff and actually focus on like what the movie is trying to say, I think that this is probably, because I think you can get metaphors and stuff from Lobster or The Killing of a Sacred Deer, and you can, you know, there's a lot to unpack there, but I think there's a lot of on the surface or easy to digest stuff in this movie.
I mean, yeah. I think this film is like kind of it's an amalgamation of a lot of themes that Yorgos has been dealing with. I mean, all of his films are pretty horny for the most part. They all have, you know, some sort of, you know, interesting, shocking, you know, sexual nature, you know, scene to them at some point. You know, Dogtooth has it, Killing of a Sacred Deer has it, and The Favorite as well. And it's, you know, he's exploring that like sex is just a part of life, like it and always has been. Like, it's, you know, the only reason we're all still around, you know, is because of sex, you know. And like, so it's, you know, it's so interesting and seeing all this discourse about, you know, how much sex and nudity is necessary in films. And it's just like, it's just a part of life. Like, what, are we going to walk around and act like we got nothing under our clothes? Like, that's just everybody, you know, it's so universal. So the way that he does use it to also, like Andrew was pointing out, to like, you learn about, you know, characters in different ways through their, you know, sexual proclivities, just the way you would of, you know, you learn about somebody through their taste in food. You know, like, there's, you know, there's just different ways to kind of go about that. And the you know, film doesn't have all this like sex scenes to make you, to want you to feel uncomfortable. It just wants you to just be like, hey, like, this is normal, let's act like it's normal, you know. And you can still want to seek out pleasure, you know, in different ways, as much as, you know, like, seeking out pleasure is just as important as seeking out knowledge to Bella, which is a very fascinating and, you know, like, optimistic, you know, way to look at life, of, you know, being able to kind of live a life without, you know, judgment, you know, if you are truly able to, you know, do the things that you want, you know. And Bella is that for us, you know. She gets to live uninhibited, and she says what she needs to say, and she does what she needs to do, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, there's an exploration that is available to exploring through the character the idea of how repression, shame, all these things change our views. And because this is a creature who was invented and didn't go through the normal growth pattern of most of us and have that stuff you know, taught to us as we were growing up and we absorbed it, this person gets to experience it on a more practical level, right? Like, they get to see things as more on a direct understanding, rather than having to, you know, learn about these things as they're learning, you know, everything that it means to be a child. So it allows for that frankness, that directness, and some really interesting things. Any movie with a character whose character name is Leg Humping Guy, you know, is trying to do some things. So there you go.
This movie has some of the best names in film, like, period. There's so many ridiculous names across this film, and I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I should mention, the reason why I was kind of like iffy on it the first time around is because I thought I was watching a different movie. I was expecting something else. So when I got like halfway through, I was expecting more of like a reenactment of Frankenstein. And I was like, oh, that's not the movie. And I should have known, because it's Yorgos, you know, I should have known that there'd be something a lot more to it. But, you know, you go into a movie with a certain, you know, mindset or expectation, and it might take you a while to switch gears and get back on track. So that's the only reason why the first time around it really didn't sit with me the best. But I've learned the error of my ways.
There is I think pretty soon there's another female Frankenstein movie coming
Lisa
out.
Lisa Frankenstein.
Yep. Yeah.
Written by Diablo Cody.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting. Something in the air.
Well, and we just on a different podcast when we recorded on the original Frankenstein, like we kept mentioning Poor Things and like talking about like this movie is if the monster, you know, got to leave the castle and experience life, you know, that's what this movie is. So it's like it takes that like general thing and then just like completely runs away with it for the rest of the movie and does it in just like, you know, such interesting ways. Like I love the different settings, and I know the dance scene has kind of been memed a lot on Twitter and posted a lot out of context and stuff. But even that scene itself is, you know, it's this very fun, ridiculous scene. But within it, you also see a lot of the themes that they're illustrating, as, you know, Duncan keeps like wanting to dance with Bella when she wants to dance by herself. And then like he's trying to lead, but she also wants to lead. And he's like, you know, so like even in these scenes where it's, you know, something, you know, just extra whimsical for the sake of whimsy, there is still, you know, work being done to, you know, further cement the themes that are going on. And I think Yorgos is, you know, really fantastic at doing that throughout this film.
Yeah, I agree. Let's do one last thing. Any final thing from Poor Things that you guys want to mention before we move on?
No post-credits scene.
It's true.
Great credits, though. The credits were gorgeous. I have to shout out Willem Dafoe because he's so fantastic. I feel like nobody talks about his performance in this just because we're so used to him being amazing. But he also gives like yet another, like, you know, one of his best career performances, in my opinion. And speaking of the credits, my theater going experience for the first time seeing this one was really gorgeous. Saw it at like 10:30 at night, but it was like packed to the brim, and almost every single person stayed in their seats through the entire credits and were like talking with the people that they just watched it with. And like, so like just watching the credits and like, you know, with the music, and then just like kind of hearing all the chatter of people's different opinions was just like, I was just like, man, movies are cool.
Yeah, I agree. I would say for my one last thing, I'll shout out Rami Youssef, who is has a great television show, if you've never seen it, called Rami, but is also playing the character in this movie that I most identified with, you know, kind of that naivete, that, you know, person that's just trying to make their way. And I think adds a real needed, you know, kind of observer to, you know, things that are going on.
He's easily the most grounded character.
Yeah. I mean, yes, yes. As far as how we would expect humanity to look. Yeah, that is, that is true. Okay. So there you go. That is Poor Things. You can check that out in theaters. I think we would all recommend it. And yeah, with, you know, with caveats of watch or know thyself, you know, we talked about all the stuff that's in it. So there you go. All right, let's move on to the best ever challenge. But before we do, thank you to our SifPop members. We do appreciate you. If you are a member, we have bonus shows that go on in the membership feed, some other fun stuff. You can check it all out at Patreon, patreon.com/SifPop. We appreciate you doing that, and we appreciate you throwing a couple bucks our way every month. That helps us to keep doing this podcast as well as keep doing the website. And if you haven't checked out sifpop.com, lots of fun reviews there and conversations there as well, including some best ever challenges that happened there too. So thank you for being a SifPop member, and if you aren't, you can be at patreon.com/sifpop.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
All right, let's move on to the Best Ever Challenge. Emma Stone films, best ever movies that Emma Stone has been in. We will go number five to number one. And if you have it higher than somebody else, we will
trump.
We will trump it. Let's start with you, Devon. What do you got at number five?
At number five, I did these kind of differently because it's like, am I doing the best Emma Stone performance in a movie? Am I doing the best Emma Stone movie? So they kind of vary on my choices. So number five is The Amazing Spider-Man, first one. Does anybody have that on their list?
Trump!
Yeah, that one has been trumped. Andrew, what's your number five?
Well, I know this one's going to get trumped. It's one of your favorite movies of all time. So get ready. Easy A.
Trump!
All right. I'm the only one that gets to talk on this show. My number five, although this might get trumped, I don't know. My number five is Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping. That is one of the funniest comedies in the history of film. I love it so much. It makes me laugh very, very much. Emma Stone, of course, played an artist whose song Turn Up the Beef was where Connor for Real kind of made his debut during doing his catchphrase verse. If you remember that in the movie where he just spouted a bunch of possible catchphrases for the breakdown bridge verse. So, yeah.
I only remember the song Finest Girl because it's one of the funniest songs I've ever heard in my entire life.
You don't remember Bin Laden? All right. We can talk about Popstar.
That's the song Finest Girl.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. That is what that song is called. Anyways, I love Popstar. Yeah. Never Stop, Never Stopping. And Emma isn't in it a ton, but she is in it. Therefore, it makes my list at number five.
She's not even credited. That's what's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Number fours. Let's see if you guys can actually say something this time. Devon, what do you got at number four?
I have The Favorite at number four.
Okay. I think you can talk about The Favorite.
Right. Another Yorgos film.
Another Yorgos film. I hope that they keep making films together. You know, this was just a performance where I just, you know, like, I always knew that Emma Stone has had the sauce. We all knew it. But, like, we didn't know that she had that angle to her in that performance that she does in The Favorite, where she is just having wicked, mischievous fun. And I absolutely love her in it.
Yep, I agree. I think she's really great in The Favorite. And she does kind of show a different part of her acting ability in that movie that she hadn't yet. I think that's a really good observation. So yeah, there's your number four. Andrew, what is your number four?
2020 was one of the worst years in human history, but one shining bright thing came out, and that was The Croods, A New Age.
I had the original Croods in my honorable mentions. I think that's a decent movie, but I didn't think the sequel was all that great. But go ahead, talk about it.
Honestly, it might be one of the funniest animated movies I've ever seen. I was crying. I was laughing so hard. It was one of those weird, like, I knew everybody was looking at me because A, we were reviewing it that week, so it's just me in the theater, a 37-year-old, or I guess 34-year-old guy at the time, sitting by himself in an animated kids movie, laughing my ass off, and all these moms are just looking, who is this weird guy in a theater?
Yeah, yeah. I remember, yeah, but you really loved that movie. I remember that review now. You really loved that movie.
I did. That's, yeah. Absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's terrible. I just didn't laugh as much as you did. What's that called again? The Croods?
I wish you could have seen the movie I saw.
Yeah, me too, actually. Me too. is it called The Croods Never Stop, Never Stopping? What's the subtitle on that one?
The Croods, A New Age.
Croods, A New Age. That's right. That's what it is. All right. On to my number four. This is where I have The Amazing Spider-Man. So we can talk about that now, Devon. Yeah, I have the first Amazing Spider-Man here. I feel like, are these movies finally getting the love they should have gotten to begin with? Is that what's happening now? I feel like since, you know, the Spidey's all united.
I feel like everyone's always been pretty on board with the first one. It's the second one that people have been back and forth on. But I feel like most people are agreed that this first one is, like, super solid. And just Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield's chemistry, I mean, that's it. Like, I mean, it is one of the best on-screen chemistries in a comic book film for me, as far as like two love interests go. They are just so really great and believable, and obviously they like went on to like date afterwards, but I think she's just really great. She's really solid as, you know, bringing some personality to Gwen Stacy, and you know, she's a smart cookie. She's useful throughout the movie. She does things, and she, you know, and looks great blonde. So I mean, yeah, love her in this one.
Yeah, she's great in it. The movie is really good. I'm one of those weird people that feels like maybe we haven't had a bad Spider-Man movie. Like, they've all been really fun in their own ways, and maybe it's just because I like the character so much, but I really love Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, and like you said, the relationship with Emma Stone is really, really good in those. All right, let's move on to our number threes. What do you got, Devon?
Number three, I have Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue Travels. I forget the sub quote for that one.
Andrew's going to trump that one. Andrew, what do you got at number three?
Crazy Stupid Love.
Good choice. I don't think anybody's trumping you there, so go ahead and talk about CSL.
Probably one of my favorite rom-coms. It's just absolutely great. Stacked cast, too. You have Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Julianne Moore, obviously Emma Stone. Yeah, just Kevin Bacon. It's a great movie. I never thought that I'd be a rom-com guy, but if they start making more rom-coms like this one, who knows? You might see a new Andrew if they start making more rom-coms like this.
I haven't watched it in a while, but I do know, I do remember really, really enjoying it and really, really enjoying the performances and hanging out with the people in the movie. Those are a lot of easy hangs for actors. You know what I mean? Like you say those names, it's just like, yeah, I'll hang out for a couple hours with these people and watch what they do. So
That was an honorable mention for me, because it's a really, really great ensemble piece, and people, you know, love to debate. Do you love Emma and Andrew, or do you love Emma and Ryan? And this is where, you know, they have a few more credits together. So, yeah.
Maybe the answer is we all just love Emma. Maybe that's the answer. Exactly. Maybe the answer. Maybe there's a common denominator here. My number three might surprise some. I have Cruella at number three. I love this movie. I think Emma Stone takes this movie that should have been nothing and makes it a very special something. I think she's incredible in it, and I had a lot of fun with it. I laughed a lot and really enjoyed kind of the texture of what they're doing with that character. I thought the costume design in that movie was absolutely astonishing. I had a lot of fun with Cruella, so I had up here on my list at number three. All right, on to our number twos. Devon, what's your number two?
Oh, sorry. I had my mic mute. Number two, Easy A. I'm assuming this is going to be on someone else's.
I also have it at number two, and Andrew already mentioned it at number five. Number five. So on all three of our lists, Andrew had it at number five. Devon, go ahead and talk about Easy A a little bit.
Yeah, so Easy A, I mean, this is kind of the thing that put her on the map. This is where we got our first early dosage of Emma Stone's charisma, this like ultra charisma that she has, and she's super funny. She doesn't do like as much straight comedies anymore, but then like every time she goes on SNL, it's like, god damn, she is so funny. And Easy A is, I think it holds up super well as a high school coming of age raunchy teen movie. Some of the best, my favorite Stanley Tucci performance also in this film. But yeah, I can't get enough of Easy A. Every time I watch it, I laugh and have a great time, like every single time. Holds up super well.
I agree. And you mentioned Stanley Tucci. I think Patricia Clarkson and Stanley Tucci together are just like
it's the best mom and dad.
Yeah, it's like everybody watches this and just goes, oh, hi, mom and dad. Can I have you, mom and dad? Can you be my mom and dad? Yeah, they're so great in this.
Parent goals.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really well done. It's very interesting. It's more nuanced than you would think. It goes to some places. I really, really enjoy it. So yeah, Easy A is great. Andrew, did you have a few words you wanted to say as well?
No, you guys, you hit the nail on the head. It's surprisingly funny for a movie that has so much to say, it's surprisingly funny.
That is Easy A at number two for me, two for Devon, and five for Andrew. Let's go to our number ones. Devon, what do you got at number one?
I mean, yeah, might be recency bias, but I got to put Poor Things at number one. This film, obviously, we just talked about, fantastic, but like, I think this is just one of those, this is one of those once in a lifetime type of performances. Like, I, you know, it stands above so many others and so very distinct. The film does, the film is powered by this performance, you know, without Emma Stone being willing to do the things that she does in this and being able to do such a range of emotions, physicality, you know, fearlessness. Like, I mean, she really just gets to do it all in this film. And like, you know, and she's still so young. So it's like, you know, crazy to think about what we could still get from her. But like, honestly, I feel like, you know, in 20 years, we're going to look back and like, this is still going to be kind of one of her top, best representative of like what Emma Stone is capable of.
Yeah, I think if we generally, Andrew and I should say, generally don't put movies we're talking about on the show on these lists. But if I did, I probably would have had it at number three, I think. Mm-hmm. I do think it's one of her best films for sure. Andrew, what's your number one?
Birdman.
Nice.
Yep. It's, I mean, it's a one, quote unquote, one-shot movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't believe that Alejandro and Iñárritu, I pray I'm saying that right, or I pray I say that right. Yeah, one of my favorite directors. You look at his work, you get Beautiful, The Revenant. I don't know if you guys like Babel as much as I do, but I think Babel is it.
No one loves Babel as much as you do, Andrew. No one.
Okay. If only that were true. Okay. But I think that Birdman, Michael Keaton gives a career best here. A lot of people would say Spotlight, but I think that Birdman is where you see him at his absolute best.
Morbius would be my answer.
I keep forgetting about Morbius.
Oh, man. But yeah, I had this at number three. Wouldn't say this is like one of Emma's best performances. This kind of was more on this is one of the best films that she's been in, though she is mm-hmm. really good in this. I mean, she, you know, was still nominated for an Oscar for it, and she's still really good in it and very important for the film. But like, yeah, the performances between Keaton and Ed Norton are just, good. So good out of this world. I totally agree. Michael Keaton is way better in this than he is in Spotlight. And I just, yeah, I've seen a lot of, apparently there's a lot of Birdman haters on the internet these days. And I was like, wait, when did we start hating Birdman? I thought we all agreed that this was dope. This is a dope movie. I thought we agreed on this. So, yeah, I love Birdman.
It came out like a week or two before Whiplash.
Yeah.
And I just remember back to back watching those two movies. I'm like, is this the highlight of cinema? Like, is this it?
Have we arrived? I don't like it as much as you guys, but I still do love this movie. In fact, it's my number one honorable mention. And is definitely incredible filmmaking and some really great performances as well. So yeah, Birdman's great. Well, I get to be the only one to mention La La Land. It is easily my favorite.
It was my number two.
What's that?
It was my number two.
It was?
Yeah, you just skipped over me, but it was all good.
Oh, interesting. I'm sorry.
I knew you were going to trump it anyway, so that's why I didn't say anything.
I didn't realize it. Oh, I skipped it because I thought my number two was done because it was the same as Devon's number two. Mm. Andrew, what's your number two?
Oh, you want to just trump me.
What's your number two?
It's La La Land.
There you go. My
Aaron,
number one,
what's your number one?
My number one is La La Land.
Hey.
It is Andrew's number two, which I knew the whole time. And yes. It is one of my favorite movies of all time. It is in my top 50. I'm just in the tank for Damien Chazelle at this point. I just think he's an incredible filmmaker. I'm astonished by the work that he does. And that is true. You mentioned Whiplash, and now we're mentioning La La Land. I just think he's incredible at what he does. And I think that Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are incredible in this. As much as they aren't, you know, professional dancers or singers, I think they are great dancers and singers in this. I think they acquit themselves very, very well. and is some of the best, most memorable music in a musical in a long time. And it really does feel like both an homage to old school musicals like Singing in the Rain, and also a it has a modern feel as well. It definitely feels modern in a lot of ways too. So yeah, I really dig La La Land, and the ending is the best part, not the worst part. Just that's a shout out to anybody who
someone on in Australia right now, his head just exploded.
I mean, yeah, I love La La Land. It was definitely gonna be an honorable mention. And I agree. Like, I mean, the ending is great because, like, yeah, Mia sucks, but that's okay. She's supposed to kind of suck. They both kind of suck. Mm-hmm. It's a messy, complicated movie, and I enjoy it quite a bit. I think she's fantastic. And speaking of dancing, another honorable mention, because it's also not a movie, the music video for Anna by Will Butler of Arcade Fire. It's like a like 6-minute short film music video of Emma Stone dancing through a boat. It is super great, so check that out.
Yeah. I think without the ending, it's not a Damien Chazelle film. I mean, he is always asking the question in all four movies that he's made. Ask the question, is it worth it? They all ask the question, is the passion, is the dedication, is the cost worth this beauty, this beautiful thing, this wonder, this amazingness? Is it worth the cost of what it took to get here? And Whiplash asks that question. La La Land asks that question. First Man asks that question. And Babylon asks that question. Like, it's his primary driver as a creative, it seems like. And I love it. So yeah, La La Land is my number one.
I get it.
Honorable mentions, Andrew. Did you get some thoughts from the gurus?
Oh, you know I did. All right. So the top three from the gurus coming in at number three, we have a tie actually with 9 points tied. We have Easy A and Superbad.
None of us mentioned Superbad yet.
Nope. Number two, with 12 points, we have Crazy Stupid Love.
Okay.
And at number one, with 25 points coming in, just making everybody else feel bad, is La La Land.
There you go. I would also mention, the only one that hasn't been mentioned that was in my honorable mentions is The House Bunny, which I have a soft place in my heart for. I actually think that's a pretty funny movie. So I would mention that. Did you guys have any other honorable mentions that you wanted to throw out there?
Zombieland. I think that's whenever I like truly developed my crush on her. It would, because I can't remember if that came out before Easy A. Yeah, it came out before Easy A. So that was actually the impetus of my crush on Emma Stone, was in Zombieland.
Yeah. Mm. Andrew, did you have any others you wanted to mention?
Easy A was when I got a crush on Emma Stone. So.
Yep. Whenever the first time I saw Emma Stone was when I had a crush on Emma Stone. She's imminently crushable. Yes. All right, let's move into the buried treasure. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about it? Devon, you're our guest, so you will go last. I'll kick us off. I want to keep it on the Emma Stone vibe. Have we talked about The Curse on the show yet? I don't think we've talked about The Curse. This is on Paramount Plus. Technically, it's a Showtime show, or so Showtime on Paramount Plus, whatever. This is Nathan Fielder and Benny Safdie coming together to do this show, and they both star in the show as well, with Emma Stone. And this is a weird show. This feels like a show that only Nathan Fielder and Benny Safdie could have brought to us. I think 2 episodes away from the show's first season being done at this point. So like I'm 8 episodes in. All I know is I cannot wait to watch each next episode, because I cannot wait to see what these characters, what awkward situations, you know, what kind of cringe is about to happen through the choices that they're making. I think Emma Stone is, as always, amazing in this. And I think some of the things it's saying about culture and representation, and some of the same themes from American Fiction that we talked about with white guilt and different things that, you know, white people do that they think they're being, you know, considerate, but they're actually part of the problem. Like, there's a lot of that going on here, too. I think The Curse is well worth a watch if you have a chance to check it out. Have either of you guys checked out any of The Curse?
I have not. I'm not big on board on like Nathan Fielder's whole thing. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not watched it yet, but because of Emma, I'm like, ooh, I should check it out. So I think I will.
Yeah, I think it's different enough that you might find a way in, because it's definitely it's a narrative piece. It's a dramatic piece. It's not, you know, faux documentarianism that, you know, the kind of stuff he's done before. So yeah, you might enjoy it. Can't guarantee it, because he's still Nathan Fielder. He is Nathan Fielder. So that does not change. But yeah, that is my buried treasure. Andrew, what do you got?
I'm excited for Emma Stone and Safdie working together.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what intrigued me.
Yep.
Let me know, Aaron, if this movie is going to be one we'll ever review. And if it is, I have a backup. So my possible buried treasure for this week is The Iron Claw.
I don't think we'll put it on a main review. Let's go ahead and talk about it now. I don't think that will sneak into a main review, so it'd be good to talk about. Yeah, what did you think of The Iron Claw?
Absolutely loved it. Truly loved it. I grew up watching wrestling and stuff, and I'd never watched them live. They were a little bit before my time, but I'd seen them on reruns and stuff. They were very famous, obviously, for the torture and torment that plagued and cursed this family. So much so that apparently it must not even be believable, because they cut out several brothers from this movie, like, that actually existed, that met some of the same fates that these brothers did. So maybe they just didn't think it would be believable that so much torment could happen to one family, but it did. And I got to tell you, some of these performances, Zac Efron is almost unrecognizable in this movie. Very good performance. But I think Jeremy Allen White is the one who I'm going to like hang my hat on and go like, this guy in the future, I'm going to keep my eye on you, because an Oscar is coming for you one day.
Yeah. Yeah. He's so great in The Bear. And it's great to see him in this as well. It is quite a transformation. The first moment Zac Efron is on screen in this movie, I was like, wait a second. Is this CG? What is going on here?
Like, yeah.
He got himself a professional wrestler's body. And it must have had like Willem Dafoe attach his head to a wrestler's body or something. It's
something like
it's
that.
It's amazing.
It's weird because in the movie it gives you like, my one thing I don't like about the movie is it gives you the stats on the Von Erichs, like Kevin Von Erich, 6'4", played by Zac Efron, famously a short man, you know? Yeah. So that's like my one like part of the movie that actually got a couple giggles out of me. I'm like, you cast so many short people, because Jeremy Allen White is also a very short man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no, the movie, I absolutely loved it.
Yeah,
I haven't had my heart broken by it yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a trauma movie. Oh. It is one where you're in for some pain. But that doesn't mean it's not worth it. And I really loved it as well. I thought it was really well done.
I can't wait.
Devon, hit us with it. What is your buried treasure?
All right. For my buried treasure, to keep in the theme of different areas of pop culture, most people know I'm a horror guy. I'm also a big anime guy. And if you're in the anime world, then you already know what is being talked about. Season 2 of Jujutsu Kaisen just wrapped up. Jujutsu Kaisen, very new anime that has kind of, you know, jumped onto the scene and is, you know, kind of very popular right now. And it's fantastic. And I wanted to make sure I shout out, because like, I think it's also, not only for, you know, diehard anime fans, I think this is like, if you've ever been curious and want to get into anime, I think this is a really nice introductory piece, because it's from a fairly young writer, and he takes a lot of influences like from, you know, certain bigger anime series, and he's like not shy about it. So it's like you see a lot of like the hallmarks and pillars of certain anime things, but then he then still twists them in his own way as well. So it's a fun show. It's about people that battle cursed spirits and demons. And they have this magical abilities called a jujutsu, where they use like curse techniques and things. So very action heavy. It's very dark. It has some horror elements as well. It's very graphic and bloody at times. And it's a fantastic. And it also has a fantastic dub too. So if you're also an anime person that doesn't like watching Japanese subs, it has a very good English dub for it. So this is a great show if you've ever wanted to get into anime. Now's a good time because it just wrapped up the second season. Third season will be out in the spring. So Jujutsu Kaisen, check it out.
I believe that's on Crunchyroll.
I can wholeheartedly endorse it.
Is it on Crunchyroll or where can someone watch that?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yep. All right.
Both seasons and the prequel film are on Crunchyroll.
Oh, nice. Jujutsu Kaisen on Crunchyroll. The Iron Claw, I think, is still in theaters. And The Curse is on Showtime on Paramount Plus. Well, we did it, guys. We managed to do a podcast. Congratulations to everybody today on the podcasting. Thank you so much for joining us. If Pop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network, you can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Much love and gratitude to our SifPop members for giving monthly to make SifPop a real thing. And thank you to Devon for coming by again today at underscore daddy disco. Where can people find you online? Where do you want to send them?
Oh, yes. Thank you for having me back. It was always a pleasure talking to you fine Missouri gentlemen. You know, get my little taste of home. You can hear, I do lots of podcasting things. Spectre Cinema Club is my main baby, where we go through the subgenres of horror. We pick a different one every month. Right now we are in the best of 2023 before we head into erotic thrillers for February. So very excited for that. I'm also a panelist on the Pod and Pendulum podcast, where we go through horror franchises like in order. So we're in the middle of the Universal Frankenstein run. And then coming next month, have a Courage the Cowardly Dog podcast coming. So that'll be brand spanking new. Very excited to share that with you guys. So you can find me at underscore daddy disco and at Spectre Cinema.
Very nice. Well, we appreciate you, Devon. Always good to have you on the show. Feel free to email and demand to be on other shows as well. We will make it happen because we love it when you're here. Lots of ways to connect with the podcast as well. You can comment or rate it or leave a review. You can do that wherever you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. If you want to email us any feedback, that can come to feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than attaching a pig's head to a chicken's body. We'll be back next week with my annual ballot episode for the Critics' Choice Awards. I'll be heading to Los Angeles to take in the awards, and I've got my ballot came in the mail, so I'll go over the ballot and make my picks. We did that for the first time last year, and everybody seemed to enjoy it. So we'll do that again, and I'll catch you then. Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.